Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week I'll be talking with Vivian Swift, author of Gardens of Awe and Folly, a traveler's journal on the meaning of life and gardening. And poet Bill Lavender talks about the first New Orleans Poetry Festival coming up April 15th through 17th. Vivian Swift is a wonderful traveler and watercolorist. She's chronicled her journeys in three books, When Wanderers Cease to Roam, A Traveler's Journal of Staying Put, Le Road Trip, A Traveler's Journal of Love in France, and now Gardens of Awe and Folly, A Traveler's Journal on the Meaning of Life and Gardening. You'll love her books and you'll envy her life. She's speaking to us this morning from her home on Long Island Sound. Vivian Swift, I'm so happy to welcome you to The Reading Life.
Well, I'm absolutely delighted to be here.
One of the things that I love most about Gardens of Awe and Folly is that you're not actually a gardener yourself.
Oh, that's right. In fact, I'm a dedicated non-gardener.
So am I, actually, the black thumb. You know how it goes. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the big lessons of this book. You don't have to garden to love gardens.
Absolutely not. I've loved gardens my whole life, and I think the only time I've gardened is when I planted some cosmos in my backyard about 15 years ago, and that was it.
It can go very quickly, can't it? Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of the 9 gardens you've selected in this book are public gardens, and some are very private, and all of them are really individual. Was that the mix you were looking for?
It wasn't intentional. I was just looking for some very thought-provoking gardens. That was my only criteria.
And you see them all through the eye of an artist. What's fun for you, I think, is painting them and drawing them, too.
Well, that's a big plus, you know, if I did think that they were particularly beautiful. But that's part of being an interesting garden. And actually, I was trying to depict them as a garden experience, because since I'm not a gardener, I tend not to look at the details. I really don't care what's actually growing in the garden. I want to enter someone's world. In other words, someone has made a conscious decision to be caretaker of a certain plot of earth, and I want to experience what vision they had, or maybe what compelled them, what motivated them to make this little patch of earth their very own.
One of the most enchanting gardens in this book is in Marrakesh, and I wonder how you learned about that garden and if you could describe it for us. It's one of my favorites.
Oh, that's the Garden Majorelle. It is currently the property of the late Yves Saint Laurent and his partner Pierre Berger. It is now open to the public, but it was originally bought about 30 years ago and then rehabilitated. It's originally an artist's garden. Jacques Majorelle was a painter, a Frenchman who moved to Marrakesh in search of light and subject matter. And then his life was completely taken over by this garden. I happened to just be reading, maybe it was in the newspaper or a travel section. You know, I wasn't looking for it, and this mention of this garden came out. It actually might have been in reference to this very specific color that Jacques Majorelle invented, which is called Majorelle Blue. It's a very intense blue. You know, all the garden structures in his garden are painted that color. And for me, that's worth a trip to Morocco just to go take a look at that wonderful environment that featured this extremely vivid, vivid blue.
It is an incredible color. I mean, I don't remember ever seeing anything else quite like it. And you look for lessons in these gardens. What was the lesson of the Garden Majorelle for you?
Well, as I summed it up, the lesson for me was more about genius, because there's two geniuses at work in this garden. Jacques Majorelle was the man who designed the garden, but then Yves Saint Laurent, who was a genius couturier, you know, beautiful fashion designer, he saw the garden in ruins, but he was able to get enough, feel enough of the original intent and the original artistry in the garden to restore it. And I've seen some restored gardens, and they're awful. I mean, I can usually pick it up right away. They do lose a lot in the restoration process. This didn't feel like that to me. This felt very much something totally reinvigorated. And I liked that these two geniuses had this discussion in a garden, you know, over decades. And Jacques Majorelle passed away by the time Yves Saint Laurent bought his property. So I was very intrigued by that aspect of it.
I love seeing gardens that have unfolded over time. It is so fascinating. Another enchanting garden in this book is in Brazil, and I love the name of it, the Once-in-a-Lifetime Midnight Garden.
Oh, my goodness. That garden is nothing but emotion for me, because I don't have any clear idea about what was actually planted in it, except for this one amazing poinsettia tree. I had walked out to the garden after midnight, after a dinner party, and was just moseying around, and the host had put lights in the garden so I could see where I was going. It wasn't in the complete dark, but I stopped by this tree and looked up and realized I was looking up into the branches of this flowering tree with bright red plants that I thought I recognized as poinsettia. So I asked the host, I said, "Is this a poinsettia?" And he says, "Yeah." And that has just captivated me. It was meeting a houseplant on an amazing scale that I had never experienced before. But also as I wandered through that garden, I realized there was something at the edges of that garden that was making the place feel very wild and spirited somehow. And I learned that this garden had been built on the very edge of the Atlantic forest, which is itself quite an interesting Brazilian rainforest.
And also, there was this feeling of melancholy that you learned about in Brazil that meant a lot to you.
Ah, saudade. Yes, that's the Portuguese term for, well, it's supposedly untranslatable. It does mean melancholy. It means a longing for something that you can never have, or a longing for something that you once had, is gone, can only be accessed through the heart. It's a very profound movement, and in fact, if you've listened to Bossa Nova, a lot of the lyrics tend to be very moody and melancholy, and even you can kind of hear it in the music.
I can just imagine. I can just hear it now. Now, listen, when you were in Edinburgh, this is one of the gardens that really spoke to me, Dunbar's Close, and you talked about how that gave you the lesson of inhabiting solitude, and Edinburgh, too, is one of my very favorite cities. So tell us about this particular garden.
This was a surprise, because Edinburgh is my favorite foreign city, and especially Edinburgh in winter. And I am from an old Edinburgh family. In fact, my family came over to Scotland as Huguenots, and they were stonemasons. So I know that part of my family worked on Holyrood Castle, which is the Queen's residence in Edinburgh. That's her home castle. I can go there and I can see where the old stonework was, the 15th and 16th century things. And then I walk further up the Royal Mile and I can find samples of my other ancestors' stonework. So I was just moseying between the two, and I looked down this alleyway and saw this glimmer of green and had to go check it out. And here it is, this amazing throwback to Edinburgh of the 16th, 17th century. It's a little formal garden, and it's called the Secret Garden of Edinburgh. So you can go there and be very alone. By the way, you can see a skyline of Edinburgh all around you from this garden. And being so alone here, is that's what I finally understood, what Dorothy Wordsworth actually called Scotland, a nation of inhabited solitudes, without any explanation of what that means. But I felt like if you're there and you're so intensely in the present moment by experiencing something that throws you back into the past, that's a special kind of at-oneness, really. It's solitude doesn't mean lonely.
Oh, that is very profound. And it's also a winter garden, and we forget that gardens are wonderful in winter as well.
They're extraordinary in winter, and almost every garden has some aspect of what they call winter interest. But especially in Edinburgh, Edinburgh is a funny city because it does stay green, and it does have winter flowering blooms there. But yeah, gardens in winter can be very meaningful and full of experience.
And finally, your travels brought you to New Orleans and the very inspiring story of a post-Katrina garden.
Yes, wasn't that just pure luck to happen onto that? Oh, what a beautiful garden. It's Karen Kersting's garden in the University District. And for me, it was so wonderful to see that garden in bloom.
I love that story. And I know Karen and admire her a great deal.
Well, you know, she's not just a rosarian. She has 75 species and 100 different kinds of plants, you know, in her garden. However, I was most taken with this wonderful garden that she planted in her driveway. She was flooded out, of course, after Katrina. It took her a year just to get her house to the point where she could move out of her FEMA trailer and back into the home. But in that year, she had to live in this tiny FEMA trailer in her driveway. So when she finally was able to return the trailer, move into her house, she really couldn't stand the sight of her driveway anymore. So what does a girl from New Orleans do? She plants 12 rose bushes in that space and turns it into this wonderful environment that is all about blooming and beauty and coming back to life.
I know. I think that's so profound. And she planted 12 kinds of roses there for a very particular reason, didn't she?
That's right. That's what she told me. She says, of course I planted 12 roses. What lady doesn't deserve a dozen roses?
And that's her in a nutshell, which I love.
Yeah.
Oh, we've been talking with Vivian Swift, whose delightful new book is Gardens of Awe and Folly, a traveler's journal on the meaning of life and gardening. You can meet her Wednesday, April 13th at 6 o'clock at Octavia Books. Vivian, thank you so much.
Well, it's been my total pleasure, Susan. Thank you.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
It is a great pleasure to welcome poet Bill Lavender back to The Reading Life. You know him as an author. You know him as a publisher of Lavender Ink and Dialogos Press. But today, he's wearing a different hat. He's here as the founder, with Megan Burns, of the first New Orleans Poetry Festival, which makes its debut April 15th through 17th. Well, Bill Lavender, welcome back.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. This is such an obvious thing. Why hasn't anybody done this before?
Well, that's exactly what Megan and I said. We were just at the BJ's reading one night just about a year ago, and we're just lamenting on the fact that so many cities have poetry festivals, and why don't we have one? We have so many poets and such an incredibly active scene that it did seem like a natural thing, and so I stupidly said, well, let's do it. And
as you
so
have
here
many
we are.
Times in the
yeah.
past, haven't you?
Yeah.
So April is a natural because it's National Poetry Month.
Right, and we managed to find a weekend that's sandwiched between Tennessee Williams and Jazz Fest. So if people don't have anything to do on that weekend, we wanted to make sure they didn't have any downtime.
After they pay their taxes, they can go directly.
Exactly, that's right.
Now, one of the things that's so hard about putting a festival together is that there are so many moving parts. You know, you're going to have tons of people, but you're also going to have tons of events, and you have lots of things that are going to appeal to lots of different types of people. So first off, of course, poetry readings.
Yeah, on Saturday the 16th, we have a full day of panels and readings. We'll have three stages going at the Arts Estuary at 1024 Elysian Fields and at MAGS, which is at 940 Elysian Fields, almost next door. We have a total of about 80 poets who'll be participating that day and giving readings, giving talks and panels and various things.
And you're also going to have a small press book fair. Now, where will that be?
That'll be at the Arts Estuary also.
Okay.
Yeah, we have several small presses from around the country are going to be represented there, along with my own press, my two imprints, Lavender Ink and Dialogos, and Megan's press, Trembling Pillow. We have Black Radish, of which our friend Martha Reed is one of the editors.
So much of the lifeblood of poetry does come from small presses, and so many of them are these beautiful books. You know.
Yeah, there should be some really interesting stuff for sale and on display there. We'll also have like bookmaking demonstrations and things like that going on.
Who's gonna do that? That's fun.
Actually, several of the presses will be doing some sort of demonstrations at their tables along
with offering
their books. Yeah.
And then, of course, you have lots of panels coming up. So what are some of the ones that you're looking forward to personally?
Well, we have Writing the Poetic Series with Grace Bauer and Ralph Adamo and Julie Kane and Nancy Harris. I think that'll be fun. And we have a panel on translation led by Mark Statman and father-daughter writing relationships. This is going to be very interesting. We have three father-daughter poet pairs.
Wow.
Who'll be on this panel. It's Peter and Nicole Cooley, Roger and Kezia Kamenetz, and Ralph and Lily Adamo.
Ah, that's great.
We'll be talking about that relationship.
Writing does seem to run in families here, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
It's so funny. Mm-hmm. Well, that'll be one to watch out for. And then, of course, you're going to have a literary walking tour.
Yeah. Nancy Dixon's going to lead a tour on Sunday. I think she's going to do it in conjunction with Joseph Makos. Joseph is going to do a print history tour, and she'll do a literary tour of the quarter, as she often does.
Yes, as she often does.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us who some of the other poets who are coming that you're really looking forward to hearing.
Well, some of our featured guests include Bruce Andrews. He'll be performing with experimental guitarists Rob Cambry and Donald Miller on Friday night at the opening event at Siberia. And then our features on Saturday night include Laura Mullen.
I love her.
From Baton Rouge, of course. And Pierre Joris and Nicole Perrafit. They're a poet couple. They do a lot of performance-oriented things. That'll be very interesting. Nii Usundari and Adina Karasik, who's another performance poet from New York. Those will all be performing Saturday night at Mag's.
So there's a good bit of music this weekend, and you are not only a poet and an organizer and a publisher, you're part of the entertainment, aren't you?
That's true.
Your life as a rock star poet?
It may be one of the excuses to have the festival was to give my band a place to play. But on Friday night the 15th, that show at Siberia is going to be Poets with Bands.
Mm-hmm.
And besides Bruce Andrews, whom I already mentioned, we're going to have Skin Verb, which is Brett Evans' slightly crazy organization, and my band, The Call Girls, and Moose Jackson's band, Shock Patina.
Yay!
Yeah.
The Poets with Bands.
Right.
Is that a New Orleans thing, you think?
I don't know.
It sounds like it, doesn't it?
Now,
what do you hope this festival will accomplish? I mean, it's such a huge undertaking. What are you getting out of it? What are you hoping that the people who come will get out of it?
Well, I'm hoping it'll sort of make the poetry community down here a little more cohesive. And, I mean, obviously we're hoping it'll take off and it'll happen every year in the future. And also that someone else will come along to manage it.
That's always the hope, isn't it?
We hope people will get excited enough about it to want to help us do that.
So you're committed that this is just the first?
Yes, we are.
Well, you've been very open about it, which I like, because you've had such an online presence inviting people to come, inviting people to submit proposals. So you've made this kind of a grassroots effort from the get-go, it seems.
Yeah, we have, and we've gotten a lot of response from around the country. I'd say our readers are just about half New Orleans and half from around the country, New York and all over the place.
Oh, that's perfect. Mm-hmm. Nice balance for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for more information, check out the website NOLAPoetryFest.org, where there are passes for the entire weekend and tickets to individual events. We've been talking with Bill Lavender, who's one of the founders of the New Orleans Poetry Festival. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
It's a testament to the power of childhood stories that they keep popping up in contemporary music. Here's one inspired by Peter Pan. It's Lost Boy by Ruth B. from the EP, The Intro.
There was a time when I was alone, nowhere to go and no place to call home. My only friend was the man in the moon, and even sometimes he would go away too. Then one night as I closed my eyes, I saw a shadow flying high. He came to me with the sweetest smile, told me he wanted to talk for a while. He said, Peter Pan, that's what they call me. I promise that you'll never be lonely. And ever since that day, from Neverland, usually hanging out with Peter Pan. And when we're bored, we play in the woods, always on the run from Captain Hook. Run, run, lost boy, they say to me, away from all of reality. Neverland is home to lost boys like me, and lost boys like me are free. Neverland is home to lost boys like me, and lost boys like me are free. He sprinkled me in pixie dust and told me to believe, believe in him and believe in me. Together we will fly away in a cloud of green to your beautiful destiny. As we soared above the town that never loved me, I realized I finally had a family. Soon enough we reached Neverland. Peacefully my feet hit the sand. And ever since that day, I am a lost boy from Neverland, usually hanging out Peter Pan. And when we're bored, we play in the woods, always on the run from Captain Hook. Run, run, lost boy, they say to me, away from all of reality. Neverland is home to lost boys like me, and lost boys like me are free. Neverland is home to lost boys like me, and lost boys like me are free. Peter Pan, Tinkerbell, Wendy, darling, even Captain Hook, you are my perfect storybook. Neverland, I love you so, you are now my home sweet home forever, a lost boy at last. Peter Pan, Tinkerbell, Wendy, darling, even Captain Hook, you are my perfect storybook. Neverland, I love you so, you are now my home sweet home forever, a lost boy at last. And for always I will say, I am a lost boy from Neverland, usually hanging out with Peter Pan. And when we're bored, we play in the woods, always on the
run. Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Octavia Books presents an evening with Eric Larson discussing his new paperback, Dead Wake, The Last Crossing of the Lusitania, Tuesday, April 12th at 7 at the Uptown Jewish Community Center, 5342 St. Charles Avenue. Tickets available at Octavia Books. Courtney B. Lance and Nikki D. Pope discuss and sign Pruno, Ramen, and A Side of Hope, Stories of Surviving Wrongful Conviction, Wednesday, April 13th at 6 at Maple Street Bookshop. Kim Voss DeVille discusses The Baby Dolls, Breaking the Race and Gender Barriers of the New Orleans Mardi Gras Tradition, The One Book, One New Orleans Selection, as part of the Xavier University Library Talks, Wednesday, April 13th at 11 in Room 417B of the Xavier Library. Today's guest, Vivian Swift, discusses and signs Gardens of Awe and Folly, Wednesday, April 13th at 6 at Octavia Books. Katie Parla reads from and signs Tasting Rome, Fresh Flavors and Forgotten Recipes from an Ancient City, Thursday, April 14th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Litigator Roberta Kaplan discusses and signs Then Comes Marriage, United States v. Windsor and the Defeat of DOMA, that's the Defense of Marriage Act, Thursday, April 14th at 7 at Temple Sinai, 6227 St. Charles Avenue. George Sanchez reads from and signs his third mystery in the Jeff Chaussier series, A Place Unchanged, A New Orleans Mystery, Saturday, April 16th at 11:30 at Maple Street Bookshop. The Women's National Book Association of New Orleans presents the third annual Art of the Book, Saturday, April 16th from 7 to 9 at IDEA, a makerspace studio at 2723 South Broad. Artists and craftspeople will compete in several categories, translating recycled materials into their interpretation of books, including everything from traditional books to decorative and altered shapes and wearable art. Submissions will be auctioned to support the artist and WNBA projects. Awards will be announced at 8:30, and there will also be a silent auction of books, original art, and gift certificates. For tickets, go to artofthebooknola.wordpress.com. Rita Grimsley Johnson discusses and signs The Dogs Buried Over the Bridge, a memoir in dog years, Sunday, April 17th at 2 at Octavia Books. Amber Tamblyn discusses and signs her book of short stories, Dark Sparkler, Monday, April 18th at 6 at Octavia Books. William Barnwell discusses and signs Call to Heal the Brokenhearted, stories from the Caro's Prison Ministry International, Tuesday, April 19th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. The writing program Big Class, which works with young writers all through New Orleans, is embarked on their third annual pizza poetry project. They'll post their work Friday, April 15th on pizza boxes at Dolce Vita, G's Pizza, Garage Pizza, Louisiana Pizza Kitchen French Quarter, Mid-City Pizza, Pizza Delicious, Reginelli's, and Theo's. A portion of proceeds support Big Class work throughout the city, so order up and have a poem delivered. You can meet today's guest, Bill Lavender, at the first annual New Orleans Poetry Festival, April 15th through 17th. There will be readings and workshops at the Arts Estuary, 1024 Elysian Fields, and MAGS, 540 Elysian Fields. The festival opens at 5 Saturday at Siberia, 2227 St. Claude, with a special performance of Poets with Bands, including Bruce Andrews with Donald Miller and Rob Cambry, The Call Girls, Skin Verb, and Shock Patina. Dozens of poets will be appearing at these venues, and there will be a book fair, literary walking tours, and bookmaking activities. For more information, check out lavenderinc.org/poetryfest. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.